Good morning. This week we are in 2 Samuel chapters 1 through 5. New king, new throne, same Lord. In 2 Samuel chapter 1, David's about 32 years old now. Between the years of 17 and 30, David was on the run from Saul. For 12 or more years, he lived as a fugitive, and he spent many hours of discouragement and disillusionment in the wilderness. But that's about to change. 3 days after David and his men returned to Ziklag, an Amalekite came to them, tells David that Saul and Jonathan are both dead. Remember, last week, King Achish told him to go back to Ziklag because his army didn't want David and his men around anymore. They didn't trust them. So that's why they returned to Ziklag. Well, the Amalekite lied, saying that he had killed Saul and showed that he had Saul's crown and his armband. Well, he was probably just a battlefield scavenger who was at the scene of the battle and took these after the battle ended. So David and his men tore their clothes, they mourned, they wept, and they fasted until evening because Saul was their king. And even though Saul was not a good king and Saul was chasing David and his men, they still mourned his death because he, after all, was their king. So David asked the Amalekite why he wasn't afraid to kill the Lord's anointed. And he knew then that the Amalekite had lied. And David told one of his men to strike him down. David's grieving was so deep that he had this lament. And I'm going to read this lament. This is how deeply he was grieving the death of Saul. David took up this lament concerning Saul and his son Jonathan and ordered that the men of Judah be taught this lament, this song of the bow, and it's written in the book of Jashar. And David said, "Your glory, O Israel, lies slain on your heights. How the mighty have fallen. Tell it not in Gath. Proclaim it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines be glad, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised rejoice. O mountains of Gilboa, may you have neither dew nor rain, nor fields that yield offerings of grain. For there the shield of the mighty was defiled, the shield of Saul, no longer rubbed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the flesh of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan did not turn back. The sword of Saul did not return unsatisfied. Saul and Jonathan, in life they were loved and gracious, and in death they were not parted. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. O daughters of Israel, weep for Saul, who clothed you in scarlet and finery, who adorned your garments with ornaments of gold. How the mighty have fallen in battle. Jonathan lies slain on your heights. I grieve for you, Jonathan, my brother. You were very dear to me. Your love for me was wonderful, more wonderful than that of women. How the mighty have fallen. The weapons of war have perished." And that was the lament that David taught his men to sing. And then moving on to chapter 2, verses 1 through 2, says that after he heard the news of Saul's death, David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up to one of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said to him, "Go up." So David said, "Where shall I go up?" And the Lord said, "To Hebron." Now David remembered when Samuel anointed him and whispered to him long ago, "You will be the next king." So he remembered that from many years earlier when he was only a teenager and, you know, Samuel had been sent to anoint him as king. So he really wanted to know, "Is it time now, my Lord?" He didn't rush to the throne of Saul and take charge now that Saul was dead. No, he waited patiently on God for further instruction. And then God revealed his plan to him. Well, today, God still speaks from his word. You might be in a situation where you are wondering, "Well, God has obviously opened the door for me and I'm about to walk through it, but Is that what I should do? Or is it the time to do it? Our tendency is to race in when there is some benefit that will come our way. And sometimes it's best to begin very quietly, to pace our steps with great care. So David, his wives, his men, and all their families settled in Hebron and in all of Hebron's surrounding cities. And then in 2 Samuel chapter 2, in verse 4, it says, "Then the men of Judah came to Hebron, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah." David was about 30 years old when Saul died, and he remained in this limited capacity as king over Judah. Remember, at this time, the kingdom was split. You had the northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. So David has only been anointed at this point in time, his capacity as king over Judah, and he ruled over Judah for 7 years and 6 months. Now, he doesn't complain. You know, "Lord, this isn't the whole part of the territory here. It's only a portion of it. He just gave me half." No, he doesn't complain. He isn't anxious because he has learned to wait on God. Surely, at that time, there were some satellite kings, some self-appointed hotshots who had been riding on Saul's shirt tails, waiting to make their move. Well, David patiently let the Lord take care of every one of them. And one of those was Saul's son, Ish-bosheth, who was 40 years old at the time, and he became king over Israel. He reigned for only 2 years. Unfortunately, while he was there, David made some decisions that he lived to regret. And we'll see some of those in 2 Samuel chapter 3. There was a long war between the house of Saul and the house of David. And David grew steadily stronger. 6 sons were born to David while he was king over Judah, all by different wives. But the house of Saul grew weaker continually because God's anointing had been lifted from him. Well, David had many other wives and concubines who bore him children in Jerusalem. David had a total of 20 sons and 1 daughter, excluding those born to the concubines. Now, after Saul's son, Ish-bosheth, died, all the tribes of Israel came to David, and they asked him now to be their king. Now, he was 37 years old when they anointed him king over all Judah and Israel. So it's finally come to pass now. He is finally, after being anointed 3 times, he's king over the entire area of the kingdom, northern kingdom of Israel and the southern kingdom of Judah. In chapter 5, verses 6 through 12, we are told, let me find it here, chapter 5, 6 through 12. It says, "The king and his men marched to Jerusalem to attack the Jebusites who lived there. Well, the Jebusites said to David, 'You will not get in here. Even the blind and the lame can ward you off.' And they thought, 'David cannot get in here.' Nevertheless, David captured the fortress of Zion and the city of David. And on that day, David said, 'Anyone who conquers the Jebusites will have to use the water shaft to reach those lame and blind who are David's enemies.' And that is why they say the blind and the lame will not enter the palace." Well, David then took up residence in the fortress and called it the City of David. He built up the area around it from the supporting terraces inward, and he became more and more powerful because the Lord God Almighty was with him. Now Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers to David, along with cedar logs and carpenters and stonemasons, and they built a palace for David. And David knew that the Lord had established him as king over Israel and had exalted his kingdom for the sake of his people Israel. There's a historian by the name of Frederick Owen, and he wrote this: "Everything favored national prosperity for Israel. There was no great power in Western Asia inclined to prevent her becoming a powerful monarchy. He goes on to say, the Hittites had been humbled, and Egypt, under the last kings of the 21st dynasty, had lost her prestige and had all but collapsed. The Philistines were driven to a narrow portion of their old dominion, and the king of Tyre sought friendly alliance with David. And with a steady hand, David set out to force back and defeat Israel's enemies, who constantly crowded and harassed the Hebrews. Moab and Ammon were captured. Then the Edomites, alarmed at the ever-increasing power of Israel, rose against David. But they were routed by Abishai, who penetrated to Petra and became master of the country. Commercial highways were thrown open, and in came merchandise, culture, and wealth from Phoenicia, Damascus, Assyria, Arabia, Egypt, and more distant lands. And to his people, David was king, judge, and general. But to the nations round about, he was the leading power in all the Near Eastern world. And that's the end of his quote. So all this is just to go on to say that the hand of God was with David. Territorially, he expanded the boundaries of Israel from 6,000 to 60,000 square miles. And you can see that on the map that I've kind of brought to show you here. This originally was the area 6,000 square miles, and here is all the other area, including 60,000 square miles. You can see the surrounding areas that were taken over. He set up extensive trade routes that reached throughout the known world. And from that, well, a lot of wealth came into Israel like the nation had never known before. David unified the nation under Jehovah God, creating a national interest in spiritual things, and that's important. A natural interest now in spiritual things. He was not a priest, he was a king. But he lifted up the role of the priesthood so that Judaism could operate openly and freely in the land. He destroyed the idol altars. He was also a man of brilliant battlefield savvy who stayed on the leading edge of all military defense. So if we look now in 2 Samuel, we're still in chapter 5, verses 17 through 21, it tells us that the Philistine oppression of Israel began in the days of Samson, all the way back then, before David. They were still Israel's most powerful enemy now, although David was once considered a friend and an ally. But because they occupied much of Israel's northern territory, they apparently did not bother David while he was king of only Judah to the south, because they didn't consider him a real threat to them at that time, since they were only interested in the northern territory. But when they learned that David was planning to unite all Israel, they tried to stop him then. In verse 22, we're told that the Philistines come again to the valley of Rephaim, and again David asks the Lord what to do. And then in verses 23 through 25, David inquired of the Lord, and he answered, "Do not go straight up, but circle around behind them and attack them in front of the balsam trees." So as soon as you hear the sound of marching in the tops of the balsam trees, move quickly, because that will mean the Lord has gone out in front of you to strike the Philistine army. So David did as the Lord commanded him, and he struck down the Philistines all the way from Gibeon to Gezer. So David fought his battles the way the Lord had instructed him. He asked if he should fight or not fight. And he followed instructions carefully, and most importantly, he gave God all the glory. Now we, in our life and times, also can err in battles by ignoring these steps. And instead, what we do is, We do what we want without considering God's will. Or we do things our way and we ignore advice in the Bible or advice from other wise people. Or we try to take the glory ourselves or give that glory to someone else without acknowledging the help we received from God. All these responses are sinful. After David became king, his first order of business was to subdue his enemies. That was a task the nation had failed to complete when they first entered the Promised Land. Remember when God sent them to the Promised Land, he told them to subdue their enemies and take over all the territory and drive them out. And they didn't complete that. They didn't do it all the way through. David knew this had to be done in order to protect the nation and to unify the kingdom and to also prepare for building the temple, which that temple would also unify religion under God and help abolish adulterous influences. Okay. Next week, we'll do 2 Samuel chapter 6.